Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Harmonize with me and hold me tight all through the night. You're shining bright. I'm your oyster, baby. You're my pearl.
Pow!
What up to this week's episode?
As if the podcast has gone to the moon like Richard Branson.
Pow! I bet that's hurt a few people's ears. They've just put on their headphones and have said, I'll settle down and listen to the gentle hum of the friendship onion.
Let's bring it right down. Let's put on our Radio 4 voices, because your voice is fantastic.
Well, welcome to the friendship
welcome
onion.
Welcome to the friendship onion. It's me, Dominic Monaghan, and sitting to my left
is me, Billy Boyd.
This week, we will be... I'm
bringing it up the energy. This week, we are featuring our wonderful new special best friend, I think.
I think he probably is in our top five friends now.
Yeah.
I've pushed a couple of people out
for him. Same, same.
I'm not telling you who they are.
I've pushed family members out.
That's all right.
Is it?
Yeah.
I just won't tell them who they are. They're distant cousins. Anyway, we were lucky enough to have Stephen Colbert come onto our podcast, and we spoke at length with him to such an extent that we've had to split it right down the middle.
That must have hurt.
And this is the second part of our wonderful interview with Stephen Colbert.
He's a very interesting and wonderful human being.
I don't think I've ever seen you be so beguiled by another man.
I am a fanboy for Stephen Colbert.
Great.
I don't mind that.
No, he's a lovely man and well worth listening to. Fingers crossed you will enjoy the second part of this interview, and we'll come back at the end to put a little ribbon on it and send it off into space, much like Richard Branson, who just went into space, and I am obsessed.
Here's the second part of Stephen Colbert. So what did you feel as a fan of the books when you heard the movies were getting made? Like, had you watched the...
Well, I had been, you know... The first time I ever had that feeling was, I remember I went to go see a movie with my friend, Keith Sargey, and we're sitting in the movie theater, and then some Elvish starts scrolling up on the screen.
Right.
And it was for Ralph Bakshi's.
Right, yeah.
Lord of the Rings. And he and I both went, oh my God, and no one else in the theater knew what was going on. We just saw the Elvish coming up, and not like we could read it, but we went, well, this is Quenya. Like, what could this be? And it had to be the Lord of the Rings. And so, you know, I had that experience. And, you know, like a lot of people, I was disappointed that it never went on. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't successful enough or something, so it never continued. So I had a slight burned feeling about people trying to adapt the Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And
some great elements in the Bakshi one. You know, the Black Riders.
What did you say?
There's some great elements in the Bakshi animated one. The Black Riders.
Oh, there is. There's some really great things in it, but it never completed, and so it left you with an empty feeling.
Yeah.
And so when I heard that Peter was adapting it, I knew that he had done Heavenly Creatures.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I knew nothing about any of the sort of the comic horror, you know, aspects of him. I only knew Heavenly Creatures. I'm like, I don't understand and then I saw a photo of him next to a model of Helm's Deep. Mm. I searched for him online back when you had to go to like Alt Web or whatever, Alt Dot, whatever. like there was, this was like 1997 internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And I found a picture of him, a kind of a grainy photo of him next to a little scale model of Helm's Deep. And I thought, oh, that's very interesting. Oh, that is interesting, A, that that's the first thing he's shooting.
Right, yeah.
And B, that's a really good rendition of Helm's Deep. That looks right to me. Mm. And then I just crossed my fingers. Mm. You know, I tried to keep up with like everybody else. Like I went on to the One Ring and
Look
for any rumors of anything coming.
Yeah.
And I actually, by hook or by crook, I was working for, it was in 2001, right? 2001 was the first one.
Yeah.
By hook or by crook, I was working for The Daily Show. I managed to secure a pre-screener pass for that 18 minutes,
whatever that thing showed at Cannes.
Also got shown around, you know, for industry people. I got a ticket to that. It was being shown, and I saw that at the MGM screening room here Avenue of the Americas. And I walked out, and I thought, how do I explain to everyone that they got it?
Oh, wow.
They got it. They got it. And what was amazing to me, and I'll say this about the whole movie, I've said this to Peter, is that what's amazing is that the books are so important to me, and I have all these images in my head of what everything looks like, and y'all didn't replace it.
Mm.
It's still there.
Right, yeah.
It is complementary to the reality in my mind. It didn't wipe it out.
Yeah. That I think that's a really kind of astute and I think very important thing that Pete did. Mm. Because when you first talked about the first time you read Lord of the Rings, the first thing you talked about was the illustrations by Tolkien.
Yes.
And I feel like Pete took all those years of people's imaginations, you know, Alan Lee and John Howe and got them involved. So you sort of subconsciously are getting into people's minds and saying, that looks right, because you've seen it in the books and there's a history. It's not like Pete just went, I'm just going to make up my version of Middle Earth. He sort of almost kind of took everyone's version of it and then he said, this is Pete Jackson's now. And so,
and John Howe and Alan Lee also took Tolkien's vision so seriously.
Yes.
That and the way Tolkien pointed with his own art, that it's like a continuous form of creation. Mm-hmm. Like their adaptation is based upon Tolkien's minutiae of his description is extraordinary.
Yeah.
And especially in the plant life. And then Peter took their inspiration so seriously that it somehow looped around to being Tolkien again. Like it didn't, like I have in my mind exactly how Frodo flees to the ford being chased by the Nazgul. Mm. I have that because it's a flat mile from the woods, from the little dingle y'all come out of down
oh, God,
to,
don't say it.
Yeah. Down to the Brunnen.
Yeah.
The Brandywine Bridge. Yeah.
And yet in the movie, I think of the movie and I go, yes, but that's it too.
Yeah.
Like they don't fight each other.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So much.
I don't know how. That's a real trick.
Yeah. So much. There's a little bit of magic in there, but also as Billy and you were saying, Stephen, so much love in all of the technical elements of the film and from Pete all the way down. Like Pete, as I'm sure you know, because you've spent enough time with him now, Stephen, loves those books, and so does Fran, and so does Philippa, and the entire cast were consistently reading the book saying, oh, do you realize this? Are you aware of that about Gandalf? Did you know this about Aragorn? I found out something today about Galadriel, which I'm sure you know, Stephen, which is just such a beautiful thing about the light of Elendil and the fact that Elendil's in Middle-earth had caused wars to take place because it's such a valuable thing, and that Galadriel's light of Elendil, she actually created herself and came as a kind of compromise to her own health in some way, the thing that she gives to Frodo. And I was like, oh, that's such a deep dive into that, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't know that it came at a price to her.
All
I knew was that the Light of Elendil is one of the Silmarils that's bound to his brow, which is the evening or morning star, so it's Venus, you know, and the great thing about it is that light in the unfinished tales, I think, I can't remember that, maybe it's in History of Middle Earth, or maybe it's in the letters, that she had in her hair the light of the Silmarils. Mm. Because she was born, she's Caliquenti. She's an elf who lived in the light of the trees. And so the light of the trees is captured in the Silmarils, but it's also captured in her hair. And Fëanor had asked her for a lock of her hair, and she said no. So he goes off and makes the Silmarils to capture the light of the two trees. So when Gimli asks her for a lock of her hair, and she gives him three.
Wow.
Well, that is the three Silmarils. And he is going to do what with them? He is going to preserve them in imperishable crystal. He's basically going to make the Silmarils himself, because right. The light of those trees are in her hair. It's this great 12,000-year loop. Amazing. In the story of Galadriel.
Amazing.
So 12,000-year loop, yeah. The great year.
Yeah, the great year, right?
Oh, you're going very deep here, Stephen. I'm loving this. I'm so, loving it.
What's the great year?
Year's this idea that it's a sort of Hindu idea, and they have it in a lot of different beliefs, that the life isn't linear. It's actually in a circle, and it's a 12,000-year circle. So we go from dark ages to lighter to, you know, being enlightened. And then you slowly go back down the 12,000 years to the dark ages. And that has been going on. And it is a 12,000-year cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we on the loop right now?
We're on our way up.
Thank God.
So that's good. We are wow. just. We're just.
I would not have put my money on that.
I think we're in the Yuga. I think it's called. But we are basically coming out of material and getting more sort of ethereal and ideas and thought rather than swords and cannons. Hopefully.
All right.
Love that.
Sure.
Stephen, I was going to ask, because I'm sure you've thought about this a few times, in a hypothetical interview with Professor Tolkien, in which you're only able to ask him one question, what is that question? And can you turn the AC down? Because it's like fucking Greenland in here.
I don't think Stephen has the ability to turn down the AC. No. And I don't think you should.
Hang on, he might. You know,
I don't think you should swear at him like that.
It's frigid in here.
I think it's lovely.
Have you thought about that, Stephen, before you answer?
I've been asked this question before.
Oh, crikey.
And I have, but I can't. I have an answer that I have an answer for this. I'm not on in an interview.
Okay.
I've never been asked this in an interview. I've been asked this by audience members.
Right.
I guess I want to ask. I'm very interested in. Oh my God, there are too many. Mm-hmm. But I guess I would ask about Glorfindel, who is replaced by Arwen in the movie. Because Glorfindel is the one who comes and finds the hobbits and Aragorn in the wilderness and says, okay, here's my horse.
Yeah.
Go ride to the fort.
Yeah.
And stays with Aragorn. And he is an elf lord. It says at one point he's an elf lord revealed in his fury. Because he's like radiates. Frodo sees him as like this blindingly white light, because Frodo started to go over into the Wraith world.
Yeah.
And he sees Glorfindel as just this brilliant white light. Because Glorfindel is such an old elf lord that like Galadriel, he lives in both worlds at once. He lives beyond the veil of our perception at the same time. Mm. He sort of is in Valinor all the time still, because he has the light of the two trees in him as well. And he's this great elf lord. Now, in the Silmarillion, there's a Glorfindel, and that Glorfindel defeats a Balrog and dies, just like Gandalf does.
Uh-huh.
And so does Ecthelion, Lord of the House of the Fountain, I think, in Gondolin. He fights a Balrog and dies. Mm. And they all fall, by the way. Like, they die by falling, I think, all three of them. Gandalf as well. Mm-hmm. Don't fight a Balrog and not be prepared to cash in
take
your
a
chips.
Big fall.
That's exactly. Basically, to kill a Balrog, you've got to die too.
Right.
Is the lesson there. But Glorfindel kills a Balrog and dies in doing so in the Silmarillion. Is this the same Glorfindel? Is the Glorfindel in the book the same Glorfindel there? Because Tolkien has some notes about it, and it's indistinct. He kind of goes back and forth as to whether it is. Mm. did he die and then get sent to the halls of Mandos in the west of Valinor, where basically elves kind of reconstitute almost like a purgatory state and kind of like, and then rejoin the other elves after a while. Mm. And did he do that and then get on a boat and come back over to Middle Earth because there was some job for him to do? Mm. Is that the same guy? So that's the question that's on my mind. But what I would want to talk to him about was Gandalf's relationship to Nienna, who is one of the Valar, who what she does is weep forever for the sorrows of the world.
That's a drag.
And she turns grief into wisdom. And Gandalf hung out with her. Like Saruman hung out with Aule, the craftsman, which makes a lot of sense because he's got a wheel of cogs. Right. Gandalf hung out with Nienna, who grieves forever for the sorrow of the world and turns grief into wisdom. And I would want to talk to Tolkien about that.
Right.
What is that? Because there is no parallel in any mythos for that. There's like Vulcan is essentially, you know, Aule, and Zeus is essentially Manwë. Mm. And like there's parallels all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, Poseidon is Olmo. Mm. But there is no Nienna anywhere in any mythos. Tolkien added a goddess of grief, essentially.
Hey, Dom.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about untucked shirts?
Well, I'm taking a trip in the next couple of days.
I know that.
I've packed all of my untucked shirts.
Good.
Not only do they fit amazingly, not only are they designed for you to wear untucked, of course, but straight out of a suitcase, no creases, fantastic if you're traveling.
And also, if you've got the performance ones, they actually wick sweat.
Yeah.
So nice when you're actually traveling as well.
Yeah, you can feel fresh and kind of breezy. They also do short sleeve shirts,
yes,
polo shirts. They're perfect as we transition back to things we've been missing, like dinner with friends, reuniting with family, maybe a holiday or two.
Maybe a little party over at a barbecue, bit a little untucked short sleeve on. Beautiful, Dom.
Yeah, they look smart and casual at the same time, which is an interesting thing that they've managed to do.
Yeah, and they do look better untucked.
I absolutely agree. They've also got sizes from small all the way up to triple XL.
And if you're not sure what size you are, don't worry about it. Free returns and exchanges.
So use the code ONION for 20% off your first purchase at untuckit.com. Billy, when I finished a workout nowadays, to switch things up instead of having what I used to have, I have a lovely bowl of Magic Spoon cereal, and here's why. I'm going to throw some stats at you.
Go on, Tom.
Magic Spoon has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving.
And there's only 140 calories a serving.
That's fantastic. And here's some other stuff. It's keto-friendly, it's gluten-free, it's grain-free, it's soy-free, and, of course, it's low-carb.
Now, you can build your own box or get a variety pack with available flavours. Cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, and cinnamon.
I like to take the cocoa and add it with the peanut butter, so now you've got a kind of cocoa, peanut butter type taste. Also, we recently got sent in the mail cookies and cream and maple syrup. Magic Spoon is bringing back those two popular flavors. When these flavors were first introduced for a limited time, they sold out extremely quickly. So now you can get them whenever you want.
So why don't you go to magicspoon.com/onion to grab your delicious cereal and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code ONION at checkout to save $5 off your order.
Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/onion and use the code ONION to save $5 off.
Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
And that's who Gandalf hangs out with.
Right.
So he has no interest in power.
Right.
He's interested in wisdom.
Nice.
That's interesting.
Just like Ian McKellen, who is now playing Hamlet on the stages of
I can't
London.
Wait. I would love to see that.
Yeah. I'm going to be in Dublin in a month or so, and I'm hoping to fly over to London and maybe see Ian.
Oh, you must.
Tread the boards as the Dane.
Yeah, you must. I'm so interested to see what they're doing with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's, as you said,
I saw his Lear. I saw his Lear a few years back.
So did you?
I did too, and he gets naked, doesn't he, Stephen?
pretty much. I mean, I think he's got a loincloth. I don't think he's...
Oh, gosh, he was naked.
Bits and pieces were out
there.
He
was pretty much naked from the waist down in New Zealand. And I got Peter Jackson in absolute hysterics in the interval talking about lovely Ian McKellen's package, I'll say.
Well, everyone was...
I think he had like a bit of like a bundle of leaves or something in London. I can't remember. I think I would have remembered.
Oh, you would remember. Let me tell you, it is noticeable. It's like an anaconda blowing in the breeze, for God's sake.
And I think everyone was discussing the play, as I hear the story. And what did you see as
you
walked up?
I said something about how about the cock on Ian McKellen, and Peter Jackson was bent over double laughing like a 7-year-old girl. It's one of my favorite moments. Brilliant. With rings being such a big deal for you, Stephen, and obviously that being the kind of peak, how have you scratched that itch over the years with other books? Like, what is something that even tries to come close to that you would recommend?
Well, okay. As much as I love the movies, and I love them, I could watch them incessantly. It's not the peak for me in terms of Lord of the Rings. The books still are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I still read them, and I still find things that I didn't realize before. Mm. And I also, listen fairly frequently to a very long, a guy named Corey Olson, who teaches medieval literature, and he used to be at Washington College, and now he's got this thing called Mythgard Institute. And he's doing this page by page analysis of the Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
And every session, every podcast of it is a couple hours usually.
Yeah.
Goodness.
And I'm on episode 140 and we're still in the Council of Elrond.
So that's page 140 essentially.
Well, I mean, a little more than that, but we've just like, I think episode like, I think it took like over 110 episodes to get to Rivendell. Wow. Or something like that. And now the Council of Elrond is really long.
Yeah.
It's so information dense. Yeah. And it's got, you know, prophecy and poems and all that kind of stuff. So again, we're not near done with the Council of Elrond. Yeah. And there's sometimes when the entire 2 hours might be on one poem.
Wow.
And like the origin, like the early drafts of it and how Tolkien originally approached this, and I love it. I absolutely love it. Wow. If I'd gotten all the way to Fangorn, I definitely would have gotten Durrending. Yeah. Because there would have been 10 minutes on like the origin of Durrn and Dingle. Yeah. And all that kind of stuff. Like he doesn't leave anything to chance.
Well, we should.
It feels as if that's really stuck in your mind.
It's
there,
a bit
Stephen.
Of a splinter in your brain.
Are you getting that? Is that coming across at all? What else? I mean, listen. I love to read. I mean, other things that were that meaningful to me were the Larry Niven Known Space series.
I'm writing this down, Stephen, because I don't know these.
Known Space.
Larry Niven.
You might have read any of the Ringworld series.
Yeah.
I don't know if Billy, the Ringworld's his most famous thing. So him, Foundation by Asimov, lot of stuff by Keith Lalmer. I love Henry Kuttner. But these aren't on the same sort of high style and scale.
Yeah.
I really like the Amber series by Roger Zelazny.
I love the Great Book of Amber. I wanted to play Random.
The first five.
Yeah.
The first, you'd be a great Random.
Right? I love Random.
You'd be a great Random.
Yeah.
Do you play the drums?
I can play the drums, and I would if they cast me as Random, I would get there, but I just...
Because he plays jazz drums.
Do you know that series, Bill?
But...
No.
Brilliant. They're all able to.
It's a very interesting confluence of sci-fi and fantasy.
Yeah.
Ah, nice.
Zelazny actually wrote a book called Jack of Shadows. I don't know if you ever read Jack of Shadows. But it's a lesser known. And Zelazny doesn't get the same props that a lot of the other writers get.
Yeah.
Because while they all wrote on pulp, literally on pulp paper, he wrote in a very pulp style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's got very like kind of, you know, like I might saying like, you know, instead of getting a haircut, he goes, I hit a clip joint. Like
he writes in a kind
of a street style.
Yeah, incredibly readable.
And but he's very funny. And the first five books of Amber are great. Second five, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, but I read the whole book, you know, the Great Book of Amber. Yeah. I read it all because I had to finish it.
The Chronicle of Corwin.
Yeah.
Those first five books are amazing.
Brilliant.
And I'm actually just rereading those now. And the world building is extraordinary, because it's the idea is that there was chaos, and into chaos was introduced, and we knoweth not how, when we're reading the books, into chaos was introduced Amber, which is the only real place and the only permanent place. And you imagine chaos as a pond. Amber is thrown in like a piece of amber, like a stone, mm-hmm. in which everything is fixed and nothing ever changes. And there is a king who is always king, and there is the royal house, and the rules are such and such, you know, and that gets cast into chaos. And like a stone in a pond, it sends ripples out. And each one of those ripples is another world, a shadow of Amber, a shadow that Amber casts all the way to the courts of chaos. And if you're in the royal house, you can travel to all of those worlds.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I love that.
But the debate is, among the royal family is, and they don't know how to figure out which one that's what it is do they go to those places, or do they just imagine them and they exist?
Right.
Because they know they're real, but because these things, they're not sure whether they're even real, they treat the people on these other worlds like garbage, essentially. Yeah. Like, if I were from Amber and I met you two, I could kill either one of you, and A, it didn't matter because you're not real, only I'm real because I'm from Amber. Right. And you're not, you're Shadow.
Right.
And also, even if you were real, I'll never come back to this world again because there's an infinite number of them.
Yeah.
And I'll just find one in which you're still alive.
That's
you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's this, and, but it also starts off in modern America, suburban New York, and has a real science fiction quality to it.
Yeah.
But, and then it turns into this very high style fantasy. And it's 5 books. And they're great.
And decks of cards are very important in that world, whereby they're able,
there's tarot.
The royal family that we're following are able to call in their family by pulling cards out. And then the character that I said to Stephen, random, he's one of the brothers who you're never fully sure if he's good or bad, but he kind of wants to be good. He's hard to predict. He's a bit of a trickster, a bit of a jester.
Yeah.
Very cool character. Yeah.
And your main character, Corwin, kind of realizes that he's not the hero of his own story.
Right.
But he's the hero. Yeah. But he constantly is saying to himself, I'm not sure I am the hero of this story.
That's brilliant.
And it's about his, basically, discovery of his own humanity.
Right.
That's what the stories are about. How he comes to understand that the Olympian way they've lived their lives is not any way to be.
Right.
It's great.
There's a lot going on.
There's another book that I have to buy you. I'm buying you books.
Yeah, keep buying me books. I love that, Dom.
Stephen, we know your time is precious. Should we eat the world?
Billy and Dom eat the world.
Okay, so tell me what this is. I understand. I was excited to hear the request, but what is this thing you
do? So, every week, Billy and Dom eat the world. And what we want to do is get food that has some sort of emotional resonance from people. So whether it was, you know, oh, I grew up with this food and you can only get it in Ethiopia and my grandmother used to make it and, you know, that kind of thing. Or even a, you know, a soda pop that you, like, there's a soda pop called Iron Brew from Scotland. And that is just a taste of my childhood. So we did that last week on... Ah. So basically something that has a little bit of sort of emotional resonance or history.
Are they still warm to the touch?
Oh, they're warm, Stephen. They're warm.
Okay.
Now you tell us about this company.
About to try.
This is your brother, right?
My brother-in-law made these, These are boiled peanuts, and there aren't a lot of places in the world that you get these. I grew up in the coast of South Carolina, an area called the Low Country, that is, this is like a very common snack. Mm. People don't make it as much as when I was a kid. Everybody had boiled peanuts when I was a kid. You can still get them, and they're very simple. They're green peanuts. They're not cooked when you boil them. They're not like roasted peanuts.
Uh-huh.
They're green right out of the ground. You know, they're just clean. And then you boil them in as salty a water as you can make, like ocean salty.
Okay.
Right.
And you boil them from hell to breakfast. And then You pop them open, and there is nothing better on a boat with a beer than a boiled peanut.
Should we get on
a
boat?
You're going to want something very drinkable.
Yeah, we have water, unfortunately. Well, so we rate these out. We do three, what do you call them?
Three,
John? Sorry, I've lost my mind.
I think three categories.
Categories was the word I was looking for. Flavor, aesthetics, and then this last one was Billy's, which was a little bit strange. Usefulness.
I think a food should be useful. So we have usefulness. So shall we taste it? Shall we taste
it, Dom? You don't have any, Stephen, but I guess we do. Yeah, let's.
I don't. I sent all of them to you.
Imagine you're on a boat with a beer in South Carolina.
With a salty sea dog. All right.
Are you ready?
Oh, they are salty.
Oh, they're salty, all right.
Oh, it's a soft nut, Stephen. I was expecting a crunchy nut. No, it's soft.
No, it's been boiled. That's when you realize, oh, peanuts are a legume.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're not a nut.
They're not a nut. I didn't know that till today, Stephen.
Yeah, peanuts aren't a nut. They're a legume.
Is that a pea?
Yeah, like a bee. Yeah, like a bee.
Pea, exactly.
My father's all-time favorite food is nuts. So, hi, Dad. We're eating nuts on the show. Go on, Stephen. Billy, it's hot in LA, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really hot, Dom.
Hot in the day and night. And I think in the day, you can kind of handle it because maybe you go jump in the pool or jump in the ocean. But at night, for me personally, I need a cool room and a cool bed. And I think we found the solution.
If you want the solution and how to get deep sleep, the good sleep that gets you set for the next day, Chilly Sleep makes customizable, climate-controlled sleep solutions that help you improve your entire well-being.
Mm-hmm. Chilly Sleep makes the Ula and Cube sleep systems, hydro-powered, temperature-controlled mattress toppers that fit over your existing mattress to provide your ideal sleep temperature.
These luxury mattress pads keep your bed at the perfect temperature for deep sleep. Whether you sleep hot or cold, these sleep systems are designed to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and give you the confidence and energy to power through your day.
Imagine waking up and not feeling tired. Chilly Sleep can make that happen. And I have to say, in the summer months especially, my bed, no matter what I do, with the blankets and the pillows and the covers, you don't want to be lying there being hot. But with that nice cooling system, Chilly Sleep, on my back.
It just helps nice you. Cool. Exactly.
Right down my spine.
And you don't get that waking up at 2 a.m. and you're like, I'm sweating. It's just lovely and it just keeps you in that nice, nice, cool, deep sleep.
Head over to chillysleep.com/onion to learn more and save 20% off the purchase of any new sleep system.
This offer is available exclusively for the Friendship Onion listeners and only for a limited time.
That's chilly, C-H-I-L-I, sleep.com/onion to take advantage of our exclusive discount and wake up refreshed every day.
Dom.
Hello.
Have you heard of Miro?
Well, not only have I heard of Miro, but when you and I are sat around trying to work out what we might be thinking about for the Friendship Onion podcast, we sometimes use Miro online, don't we?
It's like a whiteboard, isn't it? A collaborative whiteboard online platform created to help people visualize, discuss, and share the work.
Yeah, just like the whiteboard that hangs in your office, consider Miro a blank slate where you and your team or friends can all work, play, or do something in between.
Exactly. You can write on it, draw on it. The thing I like, you can use videos, send little videos to let people know what you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Sticky notes, diagrams, audio. Hey, Dom, what do you think of this idea, I might say.
Yeah, you can conceptualize your vision with it. Very often you and I will write the Friendship Onion in the middle and then we'll have little things saying, we could talk about fruit, we could talk about this. Why don't we talk about Sean Astin? Let's talk about these things. It's very, very useful if you're brainstorming stuff. I find it fantastic.
Miro is creating a revolution in how we create and collaborate. So join over 20 million users today.
You can sign up and use Miro today for free.
Go to Miro, that's miro.com/onion to start your free account.
Sign up today and take advantage of 3 free whiteboards with this exclusive offer.
Go to Miro, miro.com/onion and start using Miro today. There's no reason to delay.
So what's your first impression of the mouthfeel, the texture?
Very important in a food.
Consistency.
The first thing that hits me, Stephen, is salt. Yeah. I think John's done well with the salt.
Well done, John.
Because there's a lot of salt on this, and I think that really helps.
Massive fan of salt as well, too. I love them.
The mouthfeel is a surprise. I'm used to a hard peanut, Stephen.
Of course you are.
And that's quite soft and weird.
Yeah. And it freaks some people out to have a peanut. Because it's still got a little bit of a peanut taste to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's got you got that little backbeat of peanut.
Yeah, backbeat. Yeah.
But you also have a lot of other like there's a loamy quality to it. Mm. You know, almost like a cooked beet or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. There's a stench to them, Stephen.
Yeah,
it's unusual
You're
for
welcome.
A peanut.
Like you had said, Stephen, I can imagine this with a cold beer to offset the salt.
Yes.
Oh, I'd love that.
And on the boat, just throwing the shells into the water is the thing to do.
Now you said this is your brother-in-law's company. Was this something that your brother-in-law was doing?
It's not a company. It's not a company. He just does it. In the summertime, he just boils up big batches of it and gives it away. And this was the batch he gave me. He gave it to me and I didn't have, he gave me a giant, like 5 gallons of it. And I ate a bunch of it and I froze it. And so when I heard you guys wanted me to send you some, he packed it and shipped it out and sent it to you guys.
Yeah, our producer, John, was astounded about how many nuts showed up. But we will be giving them a good home.
So you pre-boil them?
They're green out of the ground. Uh-huh. And then you boil them in the shell for a long time. Like you taste them as you go along and they should start getting soft, but still have integrity, if you know what I mean.
Oh, it's exactly John's name.
They don't want to be mush.
No.
You know, they still have integrity, a little structural integrity. And I think those are Virginia Reds. Mm-hmm. Those peanuts are Virginia Reds. And he doesn't like them. He likes the Texas Whites, I think.
Snob.
Yeah, different types of peanuts. Yeah. You know, produce a different nut, larger nut, or have a thinner skin. They like that little skin that goes around the nut.
Yeah.
Some of the white skin's better than the red skin, because the red skin, which is what those are, I think,
no,
bitter, I'm not sure.
The skin is not bothering me at all here, Stephen. I think sometimes on a peanut, that does annoy me, red.
Yeah.
But these boiled ones.
It.
This is the first time in the history of the show that both our producer and our sound engineer are also enjoying the food with us. So it's a hit.
I used to make these myself. I lived in Chicago for years and I missed them. So when I would go home, I'd go to a farm stand and I would just buy green peanuts in the shell and take them, I'd boil them back. And my friends in Chicago did not care for them.
That's a shame.
My friend Jackie Hoffman once said, "Oh great, here comes Colbert with more of his damp food." Because that's what those are. They're damp.
Yeah, they're damp.
You're eating... They're damp.
There's a sort.
They're not moist. They're damp.
It's like I could imagine myself. I have no idea what South Carolina's like, Stephen. But I imagine myself in a very sort of wet heat on a boat.
Yes, humid.
Yes.
Because they're almost a humid food.
Yes, they're a humid food. You are one. We like to say it's like eating the ocean.
Yeah.
That's I'm a big fan already. I'm going to give it scores, though.
Oh God, it's good score. Flavor.
Flavor. This has improved the peanut for me.
Wow.
This is my favorite way I've ever had a peanut.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to give that a 9.2
out of 10, just so you know, Stephen.
That's high.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 9. Fantastic.
Aesthetics.
I mean, it's a nut, isn't it?
It just looks like a nut.
But that is
maybe has had all the kind of attractiveness of it boiled out. Anything that looked nice.
It's not pretty.
It's not pretty.
5 for me.
It's a 2.7.
Oh, William, you're quite hard.
It's not a good looking nut.
And then usefulness. I love the thing that Stephen said. On a boat with a beer, maybe you've been out fishing, you're coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking the edge off the day. Apart from that, Stephen, do people take these into the cinema? Or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No one takes them into the
cinema.
Does
anyone...
A boating thing.
Generally speaking, you make your own because there are very few places to get them anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, there used to be, like, peanut stands. There'd be a guy in a parking lot
with
a big pot.
Right.
You know? Exactly. And you go over there and get them. But it's hard to find those guys now.
It's a shame.
But, so people basically make their own now. And you have them for your own... For the pool, or for the boat, or for the beach, or for a party, or something, people have them.
But
basically, it's only for people who are like from South Carolina,
right.
or the or some of the coast of Georgia.
Right.
Or, dig this, Thailand.
Oh, wow, really?
They'll boil their peanuts?
I was in a Thai restaurant once with a bag of my boiled peanuts because I was going to deliver to some friends. And I was with a friend who was trash-talking my boiled peanuts at the same time. Right. And she said to the waitress, she goes, look at the garbage he tries to push off on us. She goes, oh, are those boiled peanuts? And she goes, we eat those all over Thailand.
Wow.
So I did not know that because they use to peanut into their food a lot over there. Mm. But so you can find them in Thailand too.
So no one in South Carolina, like, you're not going to boil them and then say bake a cake with them or something,
no,
are
no,
you?
No, I don't think so.
No, but I'll tell you what I've been curious to do.
Uh-huh.
I've wanted to boil them and make a hummus out of them.
Oh, wow, Stephen.
Yeah, cause mix them with a little tahini, a little garlic, olive oil, a little lemon. I bet they'd make a very interesting, because they're like a chickpea.
Yeah,
I bet they'd make a very interesting hummus.
I think that's very wise, because I was just about to say, I would spread that on some toast or something. Yeah. I would just spread these nuts down.
They got a real chickpea. And then, you could make a fritter, like... You could make the same way that you make falafel. You could make kind of like a fritter with it. Might be interesting.
The only
too.
Thing I'm worried about this, Stephen, is you saying you could. So you're not saying that people do.
Mm.
Oh, no.
So over 400 years since people have been boiling these, no one's made a fritter. You're just saying that you could.
Nor do I have ever seen anybody take them out of the shell and put them in anything like a salad or nothing. You eat them out of the shell and you throw the shell. They're kind of like they're garbage food.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So
like
people are boats down in South Carolina saying, you know, you could make this into a fritter. You could make this into a curry, but no one ever has.
No.
But the nice thing is that they last a long time because they've been pickled, essentially.
Preserved in the salt.
Because they're boiled in brine and so they last forever. Especially if you refrigerate them, they last forever.
And with that in mind,
if you don't refrigerate them, they don't go bad, but they get a little slimy.
Right. They don't go good. They don't go good.
That's right. They don't go good.
Like the shrimps you bought us the other day.
Yeah. What I was going to say with the brine is every so often you'll open up a nut that has an extra amount of brine swimming in it. And that's a real treat. Have you done that yet? So you've got, it's swimming in its liquid a little bit more than the other one. And you get a little... kick but of the juice, that's fantastic.
For usefulness, just purely usefulness. Because Stephen has said that you could make a fritter. You could, and no one in 500 years has. I'm going to have to give it a 1.7 for usefulness.
No, I'm not entirely useful. I'll give it a 1.7 too. But it's a hit, Stephen.
It's a great source of salt, though.
Oh my, and nut.
Which is an extreme.
And it's not a nut.
No, it's a legume, William.
It's a legume.
It's a pea. It's absolutely delicious.
I'm going
to
finish this.
I'm so glad. Well, listen, I like to spread the gospel of the boiled peanut.
Thank you.
You've won me over. I think they're fantastic. I love that.
All right. Well, Stephen, like we said, we know your time is precious. You might need to go. We know that the only other thing that we ask our guests if they're into it is to provide a piece of music to find out if something, if it is funky or not. And I think you have provided a piece of music.
I did. I named one. I don't know if I provided it, but I named one.
Okay. I think they might have it here then.
This is If You Want Me to Stay by Sly and the Family Stone.
Oh. Ooh.
A classic.
Let's have a listen to this then.
If you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see.
Okay, John, we got it.
I was enjoying that, Don.
It's amazing, but I'm just aware of Stephen's time.
Oh, come on. You're acting like he's a busy man.
Now, here's the thing. I could not hear the song. You could hear the song.
Yeah. Oh.
But it was very enjoyable to watch you guys get your funk on, but with no sound.
Could you see every moment?
I could see everything that you were doing, and it looked like you were having an episode of something.
Wow, that's one of the classic funk songs. What I love about that song so much is before they start singing, the funk is so hard that Sly's going, can barely hang on. So good.
Yeah. And that bass line is wonderful. You're a big music fan, right, Stephen?
I enjoy the music. Some, I enjoy the organized sound.
Isn't it good? It's like how we decorate time, someone said. I love that.
No,
art is how we decorate space, and music is how we decorate time.
That's
I
beautiful.
Love that.
Oh, that's fantastic. I want to drop that on somebody. Who said that?
It was me.
No, just William, that. Don't take credit for that.
Was it? Oh,
What I like about that song also, not only does it, is it funky? Did you guys, what's your judgment?
We rate our funk based on Brahms being the lowest level of funk and Prince being the highest level of funk. I'm actually going to give that a funk rating of Sly and the Family Stone. That's how funky it is.
It's so bang on.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's Prince pre-1999.
That's heavy funk.
Yeah, that's some heavy funk right there.
You've nailed it, Stephen.
It is very funky.
I like the line, if you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see. Right. I like the professional nature with which he is approaching this relationship with this woman.
It's very good.
Look, I've got time for you if you'd like to see me, but it's only today.
Yeah.
Because then I'm about to go, and then you'll know, stay here. I've got to be me. It'll never be in doubt. That's what it's all about. You can't take me for granted and smile. Count the days I'm gone. Forget it reaching me by phone. Because I promise I'll be gone for a while. Like, he's laying it out. He's putting his cards on the table. I think it's a great way to approach a relationship. At a certain point, you got to say, hey, let's look pros, cons. Let's talk about this like adults.
You could actually have used those lyrics for us today. Like you're around today, that's it, and then you're gone. I love that.
Well, Stephen, we know how valuable you talk. You want him to stay, don't you?
Yeah, I really like talking to Stephen.
We both do. We've loved your time.
I've enjoyed this immensely, John.
How was the casting for the Spy of Lake Town? Was it a difficult casting experience?
This is a good one to end on. I was at a wedding. I was officiating a wedding up in the Catskills here in New York. And one of the guests at the wedding came up to me and handed me a tube. And I popped open the tube and I unrolled it. And it was a note from Peter Jackson.
Right.
And it had from The Hobbit, you know, from shooting The Hobbit, it had, Smaug on the top, the Tolkien drawing of Smaug on the top, and a little note saying, "Hi, we really enjoy your show, and we hear you're a big fan of Tolkien and enjoyed the Lord of the Rings movies. If you're ever down here, bring the family, and we'll pop you into a scene." And I could forget the wedding. This was the sacred moment right there. And so. He included his email, and which I won't say. I wrote him and I said, "Wow, sure. I actually have 2 weeks off in August, which was like in 2 months."
Right.
And he goes, "Oh, perfect. We're shooting Lake Town. Come on down." So we went down there, and we spent me and my boys spent a week on the North Island. Up near Rotorua.
Yeah, beautiful.
And we fished for a week. We stayed in a lovely little place called Treetops. And we fished and did a little hunting. And then went down for the second week. Me and the boys and my wife shot that little Lake Town Spy thing. And then it was they couldn't have been nicer.
They're lovely.
So wonderful.
We hung out. We hung around set. Like, just hung out. They showed us everything. Peter got up, like, early on a Saturday morning and took us to the storage buildings where he's got all the old sets and props.
Yeah.
And my boys didn't even know yet what this meant to be in there. And I was levitating. They had to pinion me down to the floor so I wouldn't get caught in one of the ceiling fans when I floated up.
Love
and,
it.
I can't even begin. So anyway, was it difficult? No, it couldn't have been easier and it couldn't have been lovelier. And I fell in love with New Zealand and I've been back, and I can't wait to go back again.
And it couldn't have been more right.
It's an extraordinary experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's lovely about what Pete's done there, and just that feeling of it just being real and welcoming, the same way as your show has, actually. It's a lovely place to come to.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, when you were talking about your day there, it really does. Everyone is involved like that. It's a beautiful place to come to. So thank you for that, Stephen.
Yeah, so much fun chatting to you, Stephen. And at some point, hopefully, we'll get a chance to see you sometime soon in person again.
I hope so too.
Thank you for all the nuts.
Thanks, Stephen. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was fantastic, wasn't it, Tom?
Charming.
I could listen to that all day.
He's a charming man. Did you write down some of those book recommendations?
Do you know what I did? I haven't written them down, but I'm going to rewind it with a piece of paper in front of me. And I tell you what, this time next week, I'll be reading one of those books.
Do you know what I thought you were going to say then?
What?
This time next week, I will have bought you one of those books and I'll give you one. Much like I've been recently just throwing books your way.
Oh, wait a minute.
Hang on a second.
All these things you've been buying me is just to get something back.
Yeah.
That's Machiavellian, that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want a book from you.
Yeah.
So instead of saying, hey, Billy, buy me a book, I've been... Just buying you books.
Yeah.
Hoping that at some point between you and your wife, you go, should we buy Dom a book? And up to now, no success.
I bought your Marmite.
Not got it yet.
You never picked it up when you came down with your shrimps.
Oh, that's right.
You should have.
I will next time. Well, listen, you guys. We hope you really enjoyed that interview that we had with Stephen Colbert. We very much did. And we will be back next week for some more tomfoolery.
I love this friendship, Onion. You get to speak to interesting people.
It's great, isn't it?
It's lovely.
All right, you guys. See ya. Remember, I forgot to say.
You forgot to remember to say, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.
To the Friendship Onion, wherever you get your podcast, whether that's Spotify or Apple podcast stuff. And as Billy said, if you review us, Billy and I read the reviews, our favourite ones we sometimes put on our social media channels and sometimes we feature them on the show. And you can also leave us a voice message, speakpipe.com/TheFriendshipOnion.
Yeah, so if you leave a review, don't forget to take a screenshot, tag us in it and stick it up there.
And we will see you guys next week. Toodles.
Bye-bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.